Hey, you're about to watch one of my most inspiring interviews. I saw the chat room get all fired up, and I know that you are too. And I've got to tell you that one of the reasons I was able to ask the questions that I was is because of the conversations I'm having with people like you, thanks to my sponsor, Grasshopper. Grasshopper gave me a phone number that allows you to call me, and I've been scheduling phone calls with listeners, helping them out with their business issues. And then it also tells me what I need to ask in my interviews to help other entrepreneurs and other business people who are watching my interviews. So Grasshopper, thanks for making that possible. And I also have two other sponsors that I've got to tell you about. Rich WP, that's where you go to get a new theme for your website. I know a lot of people have been going to Rich WP to get a theme and to start doing interviews similar to the ones that I'm doing here on Mixergy. And of course, if you do that, I'm going to help you as much as possible. I'm going to help you do interviews like this and get the kinds of contacts that I've been getting. And I also want to thank Shopify.com. Shopify.com is an easy way to set up a store online. If you go to Shopify.com, it took me 5 minutes to set up a store. I know you're going to be able to do it in under 10 minutes, probably in 5 minutes or less. So go to Shopify.com and check them out. Thanks to my sponsors, and here's the interview. Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart, and I got with me the kind of story that a lot of people in the Mixergy audience have been begging for. They want to hear from an entrepreneur who built something on the side without the resources, without the tons of cash and support that comes with venture capital and being in the Silicon Valley bubble. And I got the guy here with me. This is an exciting story. Noah Everett. No, listen to me. I'm even getting excited about this. Noah Everett in 2008 built TwitPic on the side. No outside resources, right, Noah?
Correct, yeah.
No funding.
Correct.
No tons of cash. Today, he's got a website that is an Alexa Top 100 website. 20,000 new users sign up every single day. They're getting ready to hit 6.5 million users total. You've been offered eight figures to buy TwitPic, right?
That's correct. Yeah, we had an offer around late summer last year for an eight-figure buyout, and it's one of those things that just it blows your mind, you know. And one of the reasons why I turned it down is just that it's so much fun to run TwitPic, and it is kind of like my baby because I, you know, starting it from the way it was started and stuff, and it's just too much fun right now.
And no, just to be clear. Eight figures. We're not counting after the decimal points. We're saying over $10 million you've been offered for this business that's about 2 years old.
Correct. Yeah, actually much higher than $10 million, yes.
All right. All right. I could see in the chat room that everybody's excited about having you here, and they're all excited about TwitPic. But if there's anyone who's listening to us who doesn't know what TwitPic is yet, can you tell them?
Yeah, so TwitPic is basically a photo sharing application that's built on top of Twitter. So basically, you know, Twitter, as you know, is text only, SMS messages, 140 characters. And TwitPic basically lets you share photos on Twitter from your phone, from your computer, or from apps that support it.
And how many pictures shared on the site?
I think we're at getting ready to hit 60-some million, I believe, yeah.
Wow. All right, and we're going to be talking about your revenues. We're going to be talking about the profit margin. We're going to be talking about all kinds of things about the business and where it is today. But I'd like to go back in time a little bit and figure out how we got here.
Sure.
So before you were running this business, what were you doing?
So basically, you have to forgive me. I'm kind of getting over a head cold. So if I have to clear my throat, I apologize. So before I started TwitPic, I was working as a web developer during the day, doing, you know, PHP, MySQL stuff, building websites, design. And that was my day job. And so it was actually my second time to join Twitter. And originally, I just wanted a way to share my photos on Twitter, and there was no solution at the time. And so it was a Friday night, had nothing to do. So I spent that weekend. I had another site called echopic.com. I had a spare server laying around. And originally, that was just a side project that I built just to do something. And so I took the code from that website and spent the weekend kind of ripping it apart and making it work with Twitter. And that's how TwitPic was born over that weekend, you know, a few Red Bulls, and there we were. And what happened was that following week, I think it was like a Monday or a Tuesday after I launched it, it got wrote up by a large blog and kind of started this snowball effect of publicity and new users signing up. And when I first started it, I planned on me using it, maybe a few hundred people, you know, just trying to fix my own problem. And it's blown my mind where it's gone. I'm so very thankful for it, and I couldn't be happier.
All right. What was EchoPic?
EchoPic was basically just a simple way to upload a photo and share it either via the website or link it on your MySpace or something like that. It was just, I wanted to build something. I get in these creative moods where I just want to make something, and that was just one of those projects. And I had a spare server laying around that I wasn't doing anything with, and that's what I made.
What was the purpose of EchoPic in a world that had PhotoBucket and other photo sharing sites? What were you trying to add?
Basically, the purpose of EchoPic was to be a cleaner version of it. Just no frills, get to the point, a clean kind of, I hate using this term, but Web 2.0-ish design, you know. And that was the purpose of it, kind of not full of ads, not full of anything else, just get to the point. And it did great. I think we had like a couple hundred thousand users signed up. I eventually had to shut it down because TwitPic was taking up all my time, and I wasn't able to devote the necessary time to make it work properly, and the user deserved better than that. So.
Okay, and I want to spend a lot of time here on TwitPic, but I've got to ask just a few more questions about EchoPic because now I'm curious. So this was going to be a business, or were you just tinkering around trying to see what you could do?
I was just tinkering around. So I've had this habit where I'll get an idea, and I immediately go try to flesh it out, build it, build a mock-up, you know. See, ideas are a dime a dozen, you know. It's the execution that really matters, you know. And I originally started a website called IndieFi.com. The purpose of IndieFi was going to be a iTunes for independent artists. There was really, at the time, no good way for indie musicians to sell their music online. And it had been an idea I've been working on for 2 years. You know, did the whole setting up a business, making the website, all legit. Got it signed up, started, got a few bands signed up, local bands, and it worked for a while, but it just didn't get the traction I needed. By the time I launched it, the market got really saturated. And so that was kind of my first experience with starting an online company. It's always something I wanted to do, but I just didn't know how it was going to happen. And so I was just always tinkering around with ideas and websites. And the one that I didn't expect to take off was the one that did take off. So
what I'm finding is a pattern. Actually, I'm finding three categories of entrepreneurs who I've been interviewing. I've got the tinkerer, the person who's constantly just trying different websites. I've got the person who's a missionary. This is a person who's got a passion. He's going to go dying. He'll be 90 years old trying to build his business. Even if there's no traction at all, he's going to keep at it in his 90s. And then I've got the mercenary, the guy who just needs to make money.
Right.
I'm having a hard time categorizing you because on the one hand, you're not ready to sell TwitPic. On the other hand, you had a couple of tinkering type startups before.
Yeah.
Where do you think you fall?
You know, that's a good question. To be actually honest, I don't really like the term entrepreneur just because I've seen it kind of thrown around very lightly, you know. If someone wanted to compliment me, I'd like them to call me someone that, you know, takes an idea and executes it, you know, because that's really where it really turns out if you're going to make something or not, you know. I guess it comes down to I just have a creative itch that I need to scratch a lot, you know. And sometimes even now there'll be another project that I just want to work on just to tinker with something, you know. So I really don't know how to classify it either.
Okay. All right, fair enough. And in the audience, they're telling me, who is this? This is Russ Bracker. Is saying that you're a self-taught programmer. Is that right?
Yeah, so basically I was homeschooled since second grade. And I actually graduated high school when I was 15. I ended up combining some of my high school years together. I ended up graduating early, which was great. But the downside was that I was too young to get in college. Colleges wouldn't let me in. I don't even have a GED. I don't have a degree or anything like that. I mean, I completed all the correct courses and stuff. I just, you know, never took the correct test. So basically what I did is, since I couldn't get into college, I went to Barnes & Nobles, bought some books on programming, and just spent 12 hours a day on the computer at home. And thankfully, my parents didn't ask too many questions, you know, why their son's on the computer 12 hours a day. But that's how I learned. And then just messing around with things, if there's something I want to learn or try, I try to build it, you know. Maybe it's one of those things when you're first learning something, you're kind of naive about it. And it's also a blessing in disguise because maybe you don't know that you can't do it, but you're going to try it anyways, you know.
Okay, and a couple of people in the audience are asking if you're ramen profitable. Yeah, he is, and we're going to get into the revenues and the numbers in a little bit. So I suggest you guys tweet out to your friends and tell them to come watch this live. And by the time they get here, we'll start getting into the numbers. But first I want to talk about, this was February 2008 when you launched the business, and you said that you wanted to share pictures on Twitter.
Right.
Was there a site already out there that just wasn't easy enough to use that you weren't comfortable using for one reason or another? Or were you the first person to come out with this?
As far as I know, I didn't see any, but I didn't really check that hard. So that could be coming from my ignorance. At the time, I didn't find a solution. So that's why I built mine. And my goal with it was just to be a really simple way to upload a photo, get a short URL, and post it to Twitter, and have your friends be able to see and comment on it.
What about a business model? Did you have that at the time?
Not at all. Like I said, I was paying So originally, when I first started TwitPic, I had a spare server lying around. It costs, I think, like $40 a month for the server, you know. I was just paying that out of pocket. And there was no business model in mind. We didn't start putting ads on the site until I think it was late 2008, I believe. And I thought it was going to be me, maybe get some nerd cred, you know, some blogs, small blogs, write it up. And I really had no intentions of it getting as large as it has or growing as large as it has. And it's been a great, terrible thing.
So. All right. So can you tell me about the first day that it launched? Was the blog that set it all on fire, did that happen the day that you launched?
I think it was the day of or the day after. I was actually at work. I had launched it. I think about 20 people were using the site from me tweeting it out, and I was at work. And I think someone sent me a text message saying, dude, you're on Mashable.com right now. And I freaked out, you know, because it was one of the blogs I read at the time. And I think I called my mom and was like, Mom, guess what? I'm on this, you know. But that was kind of when I first had my first oh my god moment, and it was exciting, you know. And so that kind of started the snowball effect. Other blogs picked up. It started getting retweeted on Twitter, and that's how it kind of got started.
And just from that alone, things took off.
Yeah, I mean, our growth rate from the beginning, you know, was nowhere near it was where it is now. But it steadily kept increasing, you know. So for the first year, TwitPic ran on a single server for about, I think, the first 8 months, you know, a little small server, and then I had to go to two servers. And then I'm sure we'll touch on more on this later, but the scaling issues we had in early 2009 completely floored me. You know, I really had no idea what I was doing. I'm a web developer who is normally used to building websites on a single server. I didn't really know anything about scaling other than what I'd read, you know, and so it's kind of like one of those just don't jump in and start swimming, you know. So.
You know what? I think that Otis Chandler, who created Goodreads.com, said that he got a similar effect after being in Mashable. I think he was a little bit more established when he had his Mashable post. But he said that things just started taking off from there.
Yeah, I think it's good. That's the great thing about blogs is that, you know, they'll pick up sites. And thankfully at the time, Twitter was kind of still an early adopter-only site. It was just starting to break through that. And so Mashable, I think, was covering new Twitter services. And that was... so thankful that they picked us up and wrote about us, so, you know, it helped get the word out and other blogs picking it up. And I'm very thankful for the blog network that we have, that you can get free publicity, you know, you don't have to pay for it, and it's great.
Did you have to court the bloggers in any way, or did you go out of your way to reach out to them?
No, I may have sent out one email just to let someone know about it, but not really. No, they usually just pick it up themselves, and that's kind of how it's been with TwitPic. We've done no marketing. We've done no pushing it out there. It's all been word of mouth. Having celebrity users use it helps as well and stuff. And but no really traditional marketing, as you would call it.
And I could see that the business is naturally viral. When I see that a friend of mine is posting a picture using TwitPic, when I think of a place to upload a picture, I go to TwitPic and do the same thing. But did you do anything to encourage that virality?
So when I first was building TwitPic, the kind of oh, that's a good idea moment, you know, after my second Red Bull was the commenting system. And so that was when you post a comment on a photo, originally the comment would be on the site itself, and the comment kind of got lost because it's not going back to Twitter and it's only on this. And so I wanted everything to be connected. So the first, I guess, viral feature that I would put into it was having where the commenting would be sent back to Twitter as an at reply to the user, you know, as it should, because the users want to know where their comments are coming from. They may not check the photo for comments and stuff. And so that was kind of the initial thing that helped get the ball rolling.
What else did you do to encourage virality?
You know, that's, I guess the other thing that we did was the ease of signing up. So if you have a Twitter account, you already have a TwitPic account. You know, you just sign in with your Twitter username and password, and there's no need to create another account. So we kind of forego that whole unnecessary step. So that kind of helped users get on there quickly and just start sharing photos, which was the main goal anyways.
By the way, well, before I get to what they're saying in the chat room, I noticed that even today I need to put in my username and password instead of logging in using OAuth. Is that right?
Yeah, so one thing we're working on now is we're going to be adding OAuth support very soon. A lot of users have been asking for it, and we want to make sure that we're doing that and staying up to date with all the new features. So yes, OAuth will be added here very shortly. We're hoping for early February to have that release, and sometime in February. And along with some other features we're working on as well, and an updated design to kind of keep the site looking good. So,
Chris Dritt is asking in the comments if there's been any negative effect to asking for username and password instead of using OAuth, or has it been easier because people are expecting that?
At first, it has been easier. There's been a couple of times when people have been wanting to know, you know, what are you doing with my username and password? You know, we always want to respond to them and let them know, you know, we deal with tech security very seriously and stuff. And I would be the same way. You know, I'd want to know the same thing. As far as a negative connotations, which not really. Users have been pushing us to do OAuth, and I don't blame them at all, and that's why we're pushing really hard to get that out as quickly as possible.
Okay. People are asking, where are you guys based?
I'm in Charleston, South Carolina right now. We have a developer, Stephen Corona. He's actually probably in the chat. He's based in New York, and I've actually never met Stephen in person. We both work remote. He's a fantastic worker, and we use Skype and Campfire and Basecamp, stuff like that. Both my parents actually work for Twipik as well. They're based in Oklahoma, where I moved from. So I moved out here to Charleston back in April because I wanted to be near the beach and stuff. And so I live here now. I'm in my apartment right now. So that's my kitchen back there. So, yeah.
And this is where you work, right from your apartment?
Yeah. So my computer is really right over there. I sit by the window at my desk and, you know, TV, Xbox, kitchen. So, yeah, I work from home. Stephen works from home as well. My parents work from home too, you know. And we love it. Working remote works great for us, you know, and it's a fantastic atmosphere.
So we got four people working at this company, and two of them are your parents.
Right.
What do your parents do?
So early on, so I'm a developer and a designer. That's what I like doing. So when I first started Twipik, I was doing everything, handling support, handling the scaling, handling the servers, handling the new features and stuff like that. And at first that was great, but it quickly just grew too much for me, and I tried to do it myself for too long. So my father, he kind of takes care of the business side. My father is a businessman. He knows how to take care of taxes and accounting and stuff like that, and handling some ad stuff. My mom kind of takes care of kind of like the tasks that I just don't have time for, maybe scheduling a flight or something like that, or reminding me of things that I forget, you know, because I have so many things coming in my head every day, like I need to know what I got to take care of that day. So, but I'm very grateful for them. They're great parents, and they've supported me a lot, and they're great workers. And Stephen, he's a great worker as well. We hired him on, I think August or September of last year, and he's been a great addition.
Scott Drake in the comments is asking, did you have to educate your parents on Twitter? Because he says his parents would be lost.
Yeah. So really when my parents came on, they didn't really know how to use email. So, and God bless them for it. But they picked it up really quick, and they've been great. They'll call me up with questions. In fact, my mom called me up yesterday. She was, I think, formatting an invoice or something, and she wanted to know, how do I change the font size on the entire invoice at one time, you know? And so I spent 5 or 10 minutes running her through it, you know? So it's been, you know, teaching at the same time, but it's also good for them to learn it anyway. So yeah, there was some spin-up time with them, but they've been very good.
And Sarah in the comments is making a little joke. She's saying, after hearing you say that your mom makes the flights for you and all the other responsibilities that she has, Sarah says, and does she also make sure that you eat because you forget sometimes?
Yeah. So she'll call up and like, have you eaten anything today? No. And I'm like, no.
It sounds like your parents are taking on typical parent roles in this company. Your dad's taking on the finances. Your mom's taking on the taking care of you responsibilities, yeah. Like making sure you get on a flight. Does it get a little bit constraining, a little bit annoying?
Yeah, some days, I mean, to be absolutely honest, some days I wish I could just get away from it all. Twipik has been my everyday breath for almost the past 2 years, you know, and it's been a great thing. It's also been a horrible thing sometimes, you know. Because when stuff hits the fan, you gotta take care of it. And there were days when I was running Twipik mostly by myself, and the site was just buckling under the load. You know, I'd just come home and just collapse on my couch and have no idea what to do. You know, and there was a couple of times where I almost shut the site down because I didn't know how to handle the load, didn't know how to handle the scaling, and the site was breaking. You know, and I didn't want to do my users an injustice and not provide them with the best service possible. So in early 2009, when we really hit the scaling issues, the site was broken for like a month period, a lot. And I really almost shut the site down. And the day of when I was going to shut the website down, I went for a drive. I usually go for a drive at night for about an hour just to clear my head. And I decided, all right, I'm just going to try for it. I'm just going to try to push through this. I had no idea how to scale a website. At the time, we were running on two servers, you know, one dedicated web server, one dedicated database server. So I locked myself in my apartment for about 2-3 weeks, turned off the cell phone, turned off email, turned off Twitter, got a new hardware provider, and rebuilt the site from the ground up to run on a scalable platform, and it works. And after that, we had some database scaling issues, and so we pushed through those, you know. And that's why I say the most important thing on a startup is, you know, ideas are a dime a dozen, but it's the execution that really counts, you know, and being able to push through things when it gets hard, you know. There have been many, many times when I wanted to give up because it was just so hard, and I didn't know what to do, you know. I had no idea really what I was doing at the time, so.
Can you talk about what you were feeling at the time? Because I know that before then, people were loving you. I mean, they were talking up the service. You were a gift to the Twitter community. And then I went back to research this interview, and I saw that suddenly it seemed like people all turned against you overnight. Like, that jerk, what did he do to us? Like, you were intentionally doing it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so one of the things they don't tell you a lot about when running a business, man, it's an emotional roller coaster. You know, one day you're on top of the world, the next day, you know, you don't really want to do it anymore. And I'm very thankful for the Twitter community. You know, we're nothing without our users, and they're fantastic users, and I'm so thankful for it. And I don't feel entitled in any way to whatever I've been blessed with this. And I've always wanted to provide the best service possible with TwitPic, you know. And another thing we're trying to work with now is with ads, making sure we're always serving high quality ads, you know, because I would want the same thing for myself, you know. So you need to look at yourself and think, what would I be okay with? And if you can't say that for yourself, if you're trying to make a buck, but you're compromising what you wouldn't want, you know, then it's not worth it, you know. But when the site started hitting some scaling issues and the site wasn't functioning properly and the users were, you know, getting upset, you know, they had every right to be, and I didn't blame them, you know. It's hard. Sometimes people think TwitPic is a large company, and it was me that was reading the comments, me reading the support issues and stuff. And it's hard not to take those things personal because, you know, there's a real human being behind it. And people don't realize that sometimes. So I encourage people on Twitter, when you're maybe having an issue or a complaint, that you realize that there is a real human being behind there reading these things, you know. And so what I find is that when you respond to people on Twitter in a human way, they'll respond back to you in a human way. Because originally on, people are used to getting bad support. They're used to getting bad feedback, you know. And so we're trained to respond harshly to make sure we get what I want and get what we want. But I found that when you respond back to them as a human and nice and understanding, they turn right around. And some of the people that really had big problems with TwitPic early on are now some of our biggest evangelists for the site. And they're actually good friends now, you know. So you can turn any situation around on how you respond, you know, and people really endear themselves to you. And they realize you're a small company at the time. So for the first year and a half, TwitPic was just me. And so it was hard at times, but, you know, you understand, you know.
Yeah, I actually was talking to one of the guys at User Voice who said the same thing, that if he'll jump into Twitter and respond to the person who's his harshest critic, the guy who most people would fight against, if he just goes in and says, what's the problem, how can I help out, he ends up having creating one of his biggest evangelists.
Yeah. Yeah, people just want, you know, someone to respond to them. And I think I'm guilty of this too. You know, sometimes I'll call up my cable company and I'm kind of a jerk at first because I'm used to getting bad, you know, bad service. Then I've had to change that about myself. It's because, you know, it kind of comes from fear. We think we're not going to get the service we need or a response we need to fix our issue, you know. And I don't blame anybody for being that way because that's kind of how the support industry is. And so one of the things that we've tried to do, and I'm trying to work even more now, we're actually going to be hiring a community manager for TwitPic to be full-time support, to respond to issues, to talk users through it. Last night, I was up till about 1 a.m., 2 a.m., helping a user with an issue, you know. I was getting ready to go to bed, and I saw a tweet come through, and he was having a problem. So I stayed up, and we worked it through it, and we got his problem solved, you know. And
what kind of issue were you addressing?
I think he had changed his Twitter username recently, and so and Steven actually helped resolve it as well. He was on as well. I didn't know he was on up either. I was on Campfire, and he responded. And I was like, "Oh, you're on. Hey, that's cool."
There we go. I thought we lost you there for a moment. By the way, okay. Steven, if you are watching us and you're in the chat board, can you say hi? Let people know that you're there. And it's okay if you happen not to log into the chat board. It looks like it's a big crowd in there today.
Yeah.
Let's see. Somebody's asking here, technically, how do you – here we go. Joe Leo, how technically did you scale the database?
So early on, our first scaling issue was with our web servers. You know, we're running on one web server, and it was just getting flooded. And so we went to a load balanced web server architecture. And then it was our databases that started to lag behind. And so some of the things were improper setup of databases, you know, from my ignorance, whatever it may be, from not a proper index or whatever. Then it just came from we needed more caching in place, and so we put some caching in place, a Memcache for the technical people that are watching, and that really helped drop our load tremendously. But yeah, it's been a plethora of things to fix. You know, you fix one thing, and then you go into the next one and you fix that. And when you're scaling at the rate that we are, so we do about our servers handle about 3 billion requests every month. A request being a page view, an API call, whatever it may be. So about 3 billion requests a month. So at that scale, small issues that you wouldn't have on a normal system become big issues. You know, a 1 second timeout wouldn't be an issue on a small website, but a 1 second timeout on this scale could bring your whole site down on certain things. So.
And I see that Steven is actually in the chat room. He's saying,
oh, great.
His name is, tell me if this makes sense to you. His name seems to be Patrina Spears.
Patrina, I don't know what that is. That's interesting.
Maybe it's not. He's saying, hi, I'm here and listening. So maybe somebody else is pretending to be him, or maybe he can tell us what that name was. How did you meet him?
So a while ago, we put out a job position for a developer to help me with doing some of that stuff. And we interviewed several people. We got his resume in. It looked great. Early on, we were going to try to hire someone here in Charleston. And we had some issues finding someone. Not a lot of tech here like you'd find in other places. And so which is good. I'm glad we kind of got past that notion that you have to have someone local, you know. So we hired him on, and he's working remote. Like I said, I never met Steven in person, you know. We chat online. I think we're planning a trip to go to New York City, I think, in probably April or something like that, and we'll meet for the first time and hang out. But he sent in his resume, and it looked great, and did a couple of interview processes, and we brought him on board, and it's been a perfect fit. You know, couldn't ask for a better worker.
And actually, his name is Steven Corona, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So there he is. So somebody, I guess, was impersonating him there.
Okay.
So he is in there, and I know
him. Okay.
What's
up, Steven?
How'd you know he'd be a good fit?
So. I just did another interview the other day as well, and what we tell our interviewees is that skill, of course, is a requirement, yes, but skill comes second to a person's personality and their ability to work as a team and self-motivation, you know. A skill can be learned if they don't necessarily know it. And so the first thing we look for is someone that is passionate about what they do, a great team player, self-motivated, you know. And because, you know, since we're working remote, you know, we're not always talking to each other, not always in each other's business, you know. So we'll have a project to work on. I'll be working on something, and he'll be working on something, and we just do our thing, and it works great. So the ability to mesh with your team, I think, is the most important thing. Being self-motivated, being a passionate person about what you do. And the second being the skill, you know. Say, you know, they have the skills required to do a job. Maybe they may not have the correct niche skill. I mean, that can be learned, you know. And I'd rather invest into someone who can work great with us than someone who has a great skill but not necessarily able to do that.
Can you talk about what the website looked like when you first launched?
It's like crap. So when I first, I think you can look in Google Images if you search for TwitPic. I think you might be able to see some of the original versions of it. I did the design in like an hour, just real quick. The logo was completely different then. And the goal for the site was completely different then. When you start a product or a website, 37 Signals says this. I love 37 Signals, by the way. Jason Fried and their whole philosophy, I love what they do. And one of the things that they said that we picked up on too and thought about is that when you build a product, get your core feature out there as quickly as possible. Just put it out there. Even if it's half broken, just get it out there. Because in the end, your users will push you in the direction it's going to go. And you want your product to fit your users, not what you think is going to work. And so TwitPic, when it first started, is much, much different than what it is now, you know, just because it morphs and evolves over time.
You said that the purpose was a little bit different. What was the original purpose?
The site originally on was more of like just a utility site. We didn't really want it to be a destination or a social site, if you will. But users kept wanting more functionality, like tagging or commenting or better profiles, you know. And so we started putting more work into that to fill those needs, what users were wanting.
I see. Did you design the original version of the site?
Yeah, so all the designs now going forward have been designed by me and developed by me. Now we've got Steven on board. He's doing a lot of the development now too. So, yeah, by me.
Well, I'm hoping somebody will put in the chat room a link to what the site looked like, maybe from archive.org. I'd love to see it, guys.
Yeah.
So you're the developer, you're the designer, and the site looks good. It's not like it doesn't look like what you'd expect a developer design to be. In fact, the developers today, I'm noticing, have got some real design skills.
Yeah. I have this issue where I like doing everything myself, and it's a good and it's a bad thing, because sometimes I don't get the help I need sometimes when I need it. I think TwitPic right now may have some rendering issues in IE, but other than that, it works pretty good. So when I was building side projects and ideas I wanted, you know, of course, I didn't have money to go find someone to design it for me, and I didn't like being out of that loop. So I would, you know, learn how to use Photoshop. So I started using Photoshop when I was 15 of version 4, making little stuff. And so you learn to fill the needs you want. I actually really enjoy doing design work and UI design. I actually enjoy doing that now more than development work, you know, because a great UI can make or break your site, you know, because you want your site to be easy to use and non-confusing. So.
All right, let's talk about the revenue, the ads. In fact, ads are the only source of revenue for you, right?
Right, yeah. So I was in the process of starting another company when I started TwitPic. It was going to be a for-profit company, if you will, where we had products and you paid a monthly subscription fee to use them, you know, which is always the route I wanted to go. And then TwitPic took off, and I was like, well, it would be stupid if I ignored this and not, you know, grab this tiger by the tail and run with it. And so we always kind of wanted to mimic Twitter and what they were doing, you know, and Twitter doesn't charge a fee, of course. They're free, so we always wanted to be free. And so since TwitPic has been self-funded by me by working a full-time job, we've never taken any outside revenue or funding or loans of any sort. We had to be frugal with our resources and also make sure we're bringing in our revenue. So we decided to go on ads. And ads are kind of a sticky situation, you know, because they can either be good or they can be really crappy. And you don't want a crappy ad running on your website. And we've been tried to be very strict on the ads we allow on the website. You know, if we see an ad that we're not happy with or that somehow slips through our approval system, we contact our ad partner and make sure that's removed immediately. You know, if we get bad feedback from an ad, we want to remove it, you know.
I want to find out a little bit more. I want to find out how it developed. So the site launched in February 2008. Do you remember when you added advertising to it?
I think it was in late summer of 2008.
What was the first ad partner that you added?
I think it was AdSense. We're using text ads on AdSense, and I like those because they weren't in your face and they kind of meshed with the site design, you know. And
how much revenue were you bringing in from, sorry to keep jumping in, I'll back off. How much revenue were you bringing in the first month and maybe even the second month from AdSense?
I'm trying to remember. I think I brought in $100 my first month.
Okay. And the second month, are we in the low thousands or are we in the tens of thousands?
I think even still with AdSense, it was still only like $100 from there on going forward. It was enough to cover our expenses at the time, which are a $50 server. And then shortly thereafter, we upgraded to some co-location, and of course, our costs increased. The funny thing is, our revenue has always been comparable to our costs at those times. I never had to go get loans. You know, there were a couple of times when I was looking at my paycheck, looking at our expenses, and just like, okay, I got to make this work, you know. And it came through. But with AdSense, I didn't see a lot of great revenue from that. But it was just enough to cover our expenses.
All right, and then what was the next partner for advertising?
I think after AdSense, we went with a company called VideoEgg, I believe. They kind of had the flash video. And they're great. They have very high-quality ads. I love their ads. And that helped us start bringing in more revenue so we could start hiring and stuff like that. But in the end, basically, since we have been showing ads, it's been revenue positive. Sometimes only a few percent and sometimes a lot more.
Actually, let's jump into it. What size revenues are you guys bringing in now?
So right now, we're finally hit the seven-figure year in revenue. And we're in the low seven figures right now. We're trying to get to the mids here. We're projecting to, and hopefully the next year or so. And we're running at about a 70% profit margin right now, which is great for us. You know, it helps us have cash flow and cash that we can use for rainy days or emergencies or a big spend we may need, you know.
Low seven figures meaning what? 1 to 3 million?
Yeah, so we're about 1.5 to 3 million right now.
$1.5 to $3 million in revenue coming in, and the profit margins are 70%.
Correct.
Correct. Can you be more specific about the revenue?
Yeah, so right now we're at about 1.5 to 2 million annually right now, and our goal and our projection is seem to put us at around a 3 to 4 in about a year or so, depending. And then that's our goal. But as of right now, with our current revenue, we are holding a 70% profit margin, you know.
And that's not profit, not gross, right? So we're talking about after paying for employees.
Yeah, after all our expenses, hosting, whatever it may be, that's what we can put in the bank at the end of the day and use for whatever we need going forward, which is good because we don't want to be strapped for cash. Because in the end, that hurts your end user. You know, I'm not trying to make a big profit off this so I can be gaining. You know, I take a normal salary like any other employee, you know. And the goal is to use this to build a better product for our users in the end. And so this helps us get to there.
When did you have that big leap from making just a few hundred or a few thousand dollars to actually making substantial money? Was there a month that you actually took that big leap?
Yeah, so when we moved away from Google AdSense to other ad partners, because I just stuck the AdSense code on there just to be generating something. I really didn't know anything about ads, you know, a CPM, a CTR, whatever. You know, I generally knew what it was. But when we started getting to higher quality advertisers, that's when we saw the revenue increase, because that was actually what our value was. I just didn't know it, and I wasn't putting the time into it. And then we started getting on better advertisers on board. And
it's always through networks, right? It's always through third parties. You're not doing any direct sales with four people in the business, are you?
Yeah, well, actually, early on, I actually did direct sales myself, where I would just sell a spot on the sites. All right, for this week's slot, it's what was I charging? I think the most they were charged for a week's slot back in the day was like $500 for a week or something like that. And that was all the traffic. I'd put their ad or their link there. And the great thing about it was the sites that we were advertising for were actually other Twitter sites, you know, so we were kind of keeping it in the ecosystem, keeping it in the network, which was great. Since then, because I didn't have the time. So when you're a one-man show from the beginning, you got to figure out what are the most important things to do in that day. So in every day, I may have 10 things pulling on me, but you got to find out what's the most important thing. And so at the time, keeping the site running, keeping it running well, and scaling was the most important thing. So I had to pull away from the direct sales model. We are looking into doing more direct sales now, and may do some more of that going forward.
Okay. And, Merrick, if you're listening, Merrick is the one who introduced us, and I'm going to make sure to link to Merrick so the people who are listening to us, on at least listening to the recorded version of this, get to find out more about Merrick. And I want to thank him for we're not over with this. I just want Merrick to know that I'm seeing the comments that he's sending. Thank you, and keep sending them over, Merrick. Boy, I should have actually put up online all the notes that he sent me on you. This guy is really methodical. He sent me not just research on you, but links to tweets where you brought certain issues up, links to information from Evan Williams, the founder of Twitter, about you. Just incredible. Thank you. Thank you, Merrick.
That's amazing. I really do appreciate it. Thank you very much for that.
One more thing about revenue. Do you remember when you made your first million?
Yeah, I did, and I celebrated for about 5 minutes, then I had to get back to work. No, it's a great feeling. So basically, one of the milestones I had for myself was I had a company that was worth eight figures by the time I was 24, and so that was one thing that I felt good about, and just for a personal success, you know. And another thing I felt good about was also by the time I was 25, having a company that generated seven figures in revenue a year. And it's important to, when you have those little victories, you celebrate, you know. But in the end, sometimes there have been other things more pressing, and you gotta make sure you're on top of things. So I guess I'm one of those people that when I know there's stuff to be done, I gotta go get it done first, and then I can go celebrate, you know. But the thing I wanna celebrate about most is if our users are happy with SwiftPick and they love using it and they find it useful, you know, that's more important than anything. Like, I'm not trying to get rich off of SwiftPick's revenue, you know. It's there to make a better service for our users.
Well, Merrick actually asked me earlier to ask you what you bought. He said that he noticed that you tweeted out a picture of your BMW's dashboard, and this guy pays attention to detail, I'm telling you. He noticed that there was 150,000 miles in the dashboard, and he said,
yeah,
maybe you wanted to get a new car. Did you get a new car for yourself?
Yeah, I've had that car for, man, since like 2004, and I bought it with like 20,000 miles on it. I put 130,000 miles on it. I like to drive a lot. I drive a lot at night, listen to music, clear my head, go to the beach or something. I wouldn't mind having a new car. I actually would like to have a motorcycle. I'm really a big motorcycle enthusiast. That may be something I go splurge on for myself and have something to get away with.
But you haven't splurged on anything? You haven't bought anything yet?
Let's see. I'm trying to think. Trying to look around. No. No, I haven't.
You know, it's funny. I think wannabe entrepreneurs assume that as soon as you make a little bit of money, you go out there and you buy a lot of stuff, you know? They assume that you're buying yachts and all kinds of things. What I found, and I'm not saying that Merrick is, I'm just, Merrick sent me this information as part of, I think, 1,000 points on you because that's the way he is. But a lot of times wannabe entrepreneurs assume that you go out there and you spend the money right away. I remember once I had a guy who was buying ads for me. He was working at a venture-backed company, and I think he was sending us about $1 million a month in revenue. And he kept wanting to know what I was going to buy. Every time he'd send over a check, he'd ask me if I was going to go out there and buy a new car for myself. I remember I was walking into work. I'm living in Manhattan. What's the point of having a car? It just felt like the guy just didn't get what I was about, didn't get the motivation, didn't get where the enthusiasm came from. For me, the enthusiasm, the excitement came from seeing the numbers up on the board, from calling up Citibank's automated system and hearing it try to spit out all those numbers. What was it for you? What is it for you?
I guess what makes me feel good is knowing that we're a company that we didn't take any outside funding, and maybe it's a pride issue, but that we grew it from nothing to where it is now, and I'm so thankful for it. And the fact that we can pay our bills and pay our employees well and not have to be like, oh, well, we can't pay you this week because, you know, we don't have the money. We've never had that issue. And I'm very thankful for that, you know, and having my parents work for me is great. You know, I have great parents. And so that's probably the most fulfilling thing, that we've got a good product. People love it. And we're generating revenue to help make that product better. I think that's the best feeling out of all of it.
All right, let's spend a little bit more time on advertising, and then we'll talk about how much money you invested in the business. And I know it's not much, so I know that won't take up a lot of time. Advertising. I saw a blog post that complained about your ads at one point being too big. How much were you pushing the envelope on advertising?
So we started from a small text link ad. It worked great. We went to an image ad, and then we went to a larger size, and now we're at the format we are now. And we find that the format we have now gives the best visibility without being too much in your face. And running a business off ad revenue is a tricky thing to do because, you know, we don't really want to look at ads. I really don't want to look at ads either. You know, it's kind of one of those necessary evils. But what we do is we make sure that we listen to users' feedback. And if there's an ad that runs that people don't like, we'll be sure to remove it. You know, our users' opinion about our site and service and what they like is more important than making a buck or maybe making an extra few thousand that month or whatever.
What kind of click-through rates are you getting on the ads? On the standard banner ads, the standard image ads?
You know, that's a good question. I actually don't even know. My dad's been handling all that lately. And so I've been trying to pull myself away where my nose is not near everything and just concentrate on what I have. I really don't know, but that's a good question. I should probably find that.
All right, and that's because you get paid on a CPM, right? You get paid when you show the ads, not when people click on them?
Some CPMs and some click-through rates. It's kind of a mesh of both. And some are, I think, cost per or click, like actual when a user clicks on an ad and does the action afterward, you know? So it's a mix of everything.
Okay, and Ryan out loud in the chat room is saying that he remembers that blog post and he says that the guy or the kid who wrote it didn't realize that he hovered over the ad. And that's why it opened it. All right, fair enough.
That's where there's an issue with a certain browser where the way the ad is supposed to function is you hover over the ad. If you hover over it for 3 seconds, it shows you a countdown, it'll show up. There was actually a bug with Flash Player in a certain browser that when you hovered over it, it popped up immediately. And I think it was with Chrome and a certain version of Flash. And so I don't know if that got fixed or not, but I think that was the cause of it.
All right.
But thanks, Ryan. That's a buddy from back home in Oklahoma. So.
Yeah, I love that people picked that out. Ryan Out Loud, I'd love to know what your website is or who you are. Let us know. Let's talk about revenues.
Sure.
You're the only investor in the business. How much money did you put in the business?
So early on, like I was working a full-time job. I worked at TwitPic on 9 on the weekends. I would just, you know, whatever money I had in the bank and whatever costs we had, I'd just pay for it out of pocket. So early on, it was like $50 a month for servers. You know, my time was the only big investment. You know, I don't have to pay myself for the design and dev work. I think total, all the money I invested into it myself is probably about $5,000. And yeah, that's about it. Because from the time we were running ads, and the company was basically self-sustainable by the time we started running ads.
Wow, so $5,000. We're talking about a really scrappy startup here.
Yeah.
What kind of advice do you have for other scrappy entrepreneurs who want to build businesses the way that you did?
I think the thing is, build a product first and get the core features out there, and don't worry about funding. When I first started TwitPick, I had five or six investors calling me trying to, you know, throw some money at us, you know, and it was flattering. The thing to remember is that sometimes entrepreneurs or people will wear funding as a badge and like, oh, I got funding for my startup. And some startups do need funding. In our case, TwitPick didn't need it, you know, and I didn't want to have to deal with the hassle of having to worry about that, you know, because there's a divergence we're seeing now between VCs and entrepreneurs. It's cheaper than ever to start a startup now, especially online with cloud services like Amazon and other cheap stuff. And so it's very easy now to think of an idea, build a website, get it out there, and maybe only spend a few hundred bucks a month on it, you know, and not have to worry about VC. So
you were actually getting VC calls. Can you say what companies were talking to you?
I can't because of NDAs, but there were some large ones that contacted us, even some other large ones.
They're making you sign NDAs to tell people to make sure that you don't tell people that you're talking to them?
In certain cases, depending on how far along the talks got, you know, NDAs are a common thing in the industry, you know, which is good. It helps protect people's information. But we had some large VCs come in, some of the largest in the industry wanting to invest in the company.
And they asked you to sign an NDA?
Some did, some didn't, yeah.
Okay. How far did you get in the conversation with them?
To the point where I found out how much they wanted to give me and how much of the company wanted. Then it stopped about there.
And so, what were they saying you should do with the money?
I think early on, I think it was, I don't remember, probably to hire and to make sure we were, probably to hire, I think, to get someone on board to help build more features.
What vision did they have for you? What more did they want? Did they want you to become a social network yourself around photos? Did they want you to become the photo album site, the Flickr of the new world?
I don't believe they put an actual like agenda on what they wanted to be, just other than, you know, just to be a good media hub for Twitter, you know? Some of the guys that I talked to had started previous sites. Some were photo sharing sites, and they were giving me advice about things. And I was very thankful for it too. I was just a kid doing websites that I had no idea about this stuff. I don't know anything about VC. And so I'm very thankful they would take the time to talk to me, you know, and give me free advice, and it helped, you know.
All right. Ryan Out Loud in the chat room is saying that he is with Ectomachine.com, a development company that he's part of.
Yeah, me and Ryan actually used to play in a band together back in the day. So, yeah.
Ah, I see. Cool. What kind of music did you guys play?
Actually, we played in a church band. So it was
Get out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Was it like Christian rock?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was.
Now, what did you play? What was your part in the band?
I played keyboard. I play piano. I'm trying to learn guitar right now, but I don't know where it's at. I haven't had time to pick it up recently. So,
saying yes, sir. That's right. Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for telling us that. Let's see what else I've got here. Okay. More advice here. So the first thing you're saying is build the product, just get it out there,
right,
and then worry about money later on. What about the core features? You've said that over and over in this interview that you've got to just launch the core. How do you know what the core features are?
I mean, that's a good question, you know, because you want your product always to be the best and do everything, you know. So one of the things that people want that I thought about TwitPick being was being able to post to multiple networks, you know, and that was some things that people pushed us for. But in the end, I had to say no to it because I wanted to focus just on Twitter, and I wanted to be the best possible just for Twitter. So that was one of the things that we had to focus on and be niche about it, and not get too greedy about the features we want to add. You know, not saying we may not do that in the future, but at the time, we just wanted to stay lean and mean on that. You know, originally on, so like I said, another way to know what kind of product to build with core functionality: figure out the problem you're trying to solve. The problem I was trying to solve was I wanted to get my photo on Twitter, and I want people to see it and comment on it. That was the core functionality, and that's what I wanted to get out there. And so when you have a company you want to build, try to identify what you're trying to solve. What's the problem you're trying to solve? And my advice is try to solve one of your own problems. You know, when you build a product that fixes your own issue and your own need, chances are it's going to be a better product than guessing what needs to be fixed, you know? Because chances are what you build to fix your own needs is going to help other people as well. You know, you're not that uncommon where the issue you're having is not going to help someone else.
You know what? I realized when I asked you what the first version of TwitPic looked like, you gave, I think it was a groan, and you're not the first or only, you're not nearly the only entrepreneur to do that. I keep noticing that. In fact, if anyone's watching this, when you replay it, listen for that spot. And if you listen to my interview with the founder of Thrillist, a site that's known for being beautiful, for delivering style to its audience, notice yeah. how his reaction is similar to Noah's reaction. And all that, Noah, is to ask you, it feels a little painful to launch a site that doesn't look great, that doesn't look as beautiful as you have in mind.
Yeah.
Did it feel that way to you?
Yeah, it comes down to a lot of, you know, your skills evolve over time, you know. My skills weren't really up to par in the design stuff. And also, when you stick something out that you make, that you design, you know, that's a part of you. And so when people have an opinion about something you've made, you know, that can cut deep, you know, because that's, you know, like artists, you know, if someone makes a painting and someone gives a bad review on it, it may hurt the artist because they may be exposing something inside of them that's pretty deep to make that painting or that thing. It's kind of the same thing with website stuff, building a website. You know, that was my best skill at the time.
What kind of negative reviews did you get about your design or feedback?
I don't remember negative design or feedback on the design. Most of the negative feedback came from when the site just wasn't scaling properly. And kind of the same thing, you know, I've always wanted to provide the best I can. So when you feel like you're failing your users and failing when you're not able to keep up with the traffic and the exposure you're getting, you know, it weighed on me a lot.
So, all right, what else? What other advice do we have for entrepreneurs who are listening who want to start their own business?
And just have fun, you know. There were times when it stopped being fun, you know, and I had to kind of sit myself down. And I took actually a two or three month break from Twitter, some things that happened in my life, some personal things. And I just kind of took a step back, regrouped, and figured out, you know, why are you doing this, you know? And entrepreneurs sometimes think that selling is the end result, you know. And I'm not saying TwitPic won't be sold one day. Not right now. I'm having too much fun with it. But, you know, it really is. It's the part of having an idea, building it, nurturing it, watching it grow. That's the fun part, you know. Getting to interact with the users, getting to see how they use the site, and seeing all the wonderful people out there that you get to meet on a daily basis. That's the fun part, you know. And to be absolutely honest, if I sold TwitPic anytime soon, I'd probably be kind of depressed, you know, because that's a big part of my life right now, and I love it. And it's like a baby. It's like a child, you know. You want to see it do well, so, yeah.
You know what? It's funny you should say that. I've spoken to several entrepreneurs who, after they sold their business, said that they were depressed. And here they are. They're tossing out numbers like it's nothing. They're saying we sold for $10 million, $20 million, and so on, and still they're depressed, and it's hard for outsiders to understand it, but there's a sense of a loss. And I could see, you're having so much fun here, I could see what the loss would be. It would be a loss of contact with the community, a loss of creativity, a loss of connection.
Because in the end, it doesn't matter how much money you're making, and it doesn't matter how much you sell it for, you know. In the end, it matters. How do you feel about yourself as a person? And when it's time, you know, for you to, you know, go leave this earth, it's time for you to die. How are you going to feel about yourself in that day? You know, the decisions that you made in your life with your business, were you honorable about the things you do? And so we've had issues with TwitPic where we've had opportunities to make non-honorable decisions, you know. Or
like what?
Maybe on displaying ads that weren't very high quality, we could make more money. I'm trying to think of an instance. Some things I can't talk about for legal reasons, but in the end, you just need to ask yourself when you make a decision, does it clash with what you want inside? You know, by the end of the day, the decisions have you made, do you still feel good about yourself? And in the end, that's what matters when you run your business, and to run your business with honor and integrity to make sure you're doing it the best you can.
Let's see what else we've got here. Oh, you mentioned earlier something happened in your life. This is a loss of a friend we're talking about, in an accident, right?
Yeah, so back in September this year, my best friend was killed in a car accident, and it was very, very sudden. He had just recently come out to visit me here. He's a friend from Oklahoma, and so 5 weeks later, I got the phone call that he was killed in a car accident that morning, and it shocked me, and it shook me to the core. And that took that time to kind of step back from Twitter for a few months, step back from TwitPic, actually, too. At the time, Stephen was on board, and he kind of took care of the stuff and the parents, and I just... it was kind of a twofold thing, you know, losing a loved one and figuring out what it is that makes you happy. And it kind of made me realize, you know, with TwigPick, make sure it's always fun, and it's not about numbers or revenue or selling. It's just about the journey and about who's there that loves you and who's going to be there in the end, you know, that loves you. So,
yeah. Why did you move from Oklahoma to South Carolina?
I'm actually originally from North Carolina. I was born in North Carolina. I moved out to the Midwest when I was younger, lived there for about 18 years. I actually saw the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson. It was filmed here in South Carolina. And at the time, I had nothing to hold me back home. And I got the idea, well, maybe I'll just move back out there. I want to be close to the beach, warmer weather. And so I took a trip out here in March, end of March. And 2 weeks later, I was moved out, and here I am.
Let's see. All right, I'm going to go through some more of Merrick's questions here. He's saying that you took a trip to San Francisco to present to Twitter last February. How did it go?
Oh, man, it went horrible because I was so nervous. Well, I thought it went horrible. I got an email from Biz one day inviting me out because I was actually going to be out in San Francisco to speak at a mobile conference, and he invited me to come by and see the Twitter office, and I was thrilled, man. I was like a teenage schoolgirl. I was so excited. But I got the chance to meet the team at the time and present on TwitPick, and I was so nervous. I fumbled my presentation horribly. But they're a great group of people, and they've built an amazing product, and so thankful for how much work they put in, you know, because they've dealt with tremendous growth as well, and so I can empathize with them. And but they're a great group of people.
What were you presenting for?
Just showing them TwitPick. At the time, I was showing them some new features about the new version that was coming out, that's out now, and just saying hey and stuff. And I actually walked from my hotel in downtown San Francisco to their offices, which is about, I guess, 3/4 of a mile. I didn't realize how far it was away, and I kind of walked through some rough areas. So I'm just kind of, you know, trudging through with my laptop. You know, I have no idea what I'm doing. So.
Wow. Did everyone wants to know, did they make you an offer?
I can't really talk about that. But yeah.
But they did.
No, they didn't. But are there any other details about that I can't really talk about?
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Ev, for a long time, was using TwitPick, and then at one point when you guys had some trouble, he publicly asked for alternatives to TwitPick. How did that feel? Did you at that point feel, well, what did you feel at that time about your business?
It just kind of just compounded with the other things, you know. It weighs on you heavy when you're not being able to provide the service and the level of service you want for your users, you know. And of course, with anything, when it's someone's talking about something you built personally, it hurts. But you gotta just kind of learn to get a thick skin, and you push through, you know. And he had every right to say that, and any other user had every right to say that too, to find something that's good.
You
pushed
through. You didn't just say maybe that's it, maybe it's not going to work for me. I was just a kid playing around with a server, and this isn't it. This is too big for me.
Oh Lord knows I wanted to. There was a couple of days where I was like, you know, screw this, I'm done. You know, it's too hard. And I almost did just because I didn't want to provide a crappy service. You know, I didn't want to provide a service that was broken. And it was for about a month period, you know, off and on. But I pushed through, and I'm so glad I did. And in the end, it makes you stronger as a person to know what you can push through. So that's one thing you need to learn when running a business, is that you're going to push yourself to the point where you don't think you can push anymore, and then you got to push even harder. And that's when you learn even more about yourself. So.
Right. And I noticed that Ev, the founder of Twitter, is the CEO of Twitter, is back using your service, and he's also using some of your competitor services too. And actually, can you talk about some of the celebrities who are on your site? I think I saw Demi Moore on there. Ashton Kutcher took a picture of her in a bathing suit that was passed all over the internet. Am I right?
Yeah, that was one of them. Demi Moore uses the site. I think she posted something the other day. Let's see, who else? Miley used this for a while when she was on Twitter. Taylor Swift uses TwitPick. Lady Gaga. And a bunch of others. It's great to feel and see that they're using the site, and it means a lot they would choose to share, you know, intimate photos of themselves on TwitPick and Twitter, because they get to choose what they want to put out there and not what the paparazzi wants, you know.
And am I reading the chat room right here? I think Russ is saying that the White House used TwitPick.
I think the White House did use TwitPick. I'm not quite for sure, but yeah.
And you see Tony Hawk, Merrick is telling me, Jimmy Fallon from The Late Show used TwitPick.
Right, wow. Yeah. He actually posted some photos from the show when he was taping it, and I actually didn't watch the show that night, and so it's weird to see from his perspective, and then I'm watching it on TV. So it was really cool.
Wow. There's no way as a startup you can have enough money to get this kind of to get any kind of endorsement. And this is the best kind of endorsement there is. They're actual users. They're not just standing with your product saying to everyone else that they should be using it. They're using it themselves.
Right.
You grew last year from 1 million users to 4 million users. Are those numbers right?
Yeah. So at our peak, we were growing at our peak at around 30,000 users a day. And so we would grow anytime, where from 600,000 to just over 1 million users in a month, you know. And so it took us like 15 months to hit our first million. And then, so from that point on now, we're at 6.5 million. So our velocity of growth picked up a lot.
Why are you doing so well considering all the competitors that came into the market last year?
You know, that's a good question. The users have a choice to use whatever service they want, and I'm very thankful that they choose to use us.
What are you doing to get them to choose you?
Try to provide the best service possible, you know. People sometimes get caught up on the whole competitor thing, you know, and the fact is that in any market you're in, if you're in a good market, they're going to be competitors. And if you don't have any competitors, you need to question your product, you know, like, where are you at? So, and that's just business. And what it is, my philosophy is you just run your race, you know. You just look forward and you run your race. And you worry about providing the best product you can to your users, you know, and then you let everything else take care of itself.
Red Palmetto is asking, is there an iPhone app that natively uses TweetPic? And yeah, there are tons of them that use TweetPic. The one that I use, Tweety, uses TweetPic, right?
Yeah, Tweety and Echo Phone, which used to be Twitter Phone, or Twitter Phone, uses it. We're integrated in pretty much all the Twitter clients out there. Some of them you may need to change your default service to TweetPic, but you can do that from the settings.
And that, by the way, is because now those guys, the app creators, are charging services like you to make them the default, right?
Right, yeah. So what happened is some app developers will try to see who they can get the best bid from services to get the most money to make their service the default, if you will. And I've kind of been iffy about that, because in my philosophy is you should provide the best service you can for your users and what they want, and not how much you can pad your pockets with, you know. And you know, they're free to do whatever they want, and as with anybody is, you know. But that's just my personal opinion on it, because sometimes users were using TweetPic from an app, and then the app developer changed the default service without letting their users know, and the users didn't realize they were posting to another service, and it created a broken experience for the user and didn't have the user's experience in mind with that, or their best outcome in mind. So
I gotta say, I'm pissed off that happened to me with Tweety. I must have upgraded from one version of Tweety to another, and suddenly I'm using YFrog, which is an ugly freaking service. And I don't want to use YFrog, even if it was a beautiful service. I've got all my stuff with you and with Posterous. I don't want to have it all over the internet. At the same time, I understand they want to bring in some revenue over at Tweety.
Right, and I understand, you know, bringing in revenue is great, and you know, you need to do what you need to do to survive, you know. But what we've decided to do, I don't speak for anyone else, I only speak for us. And so at TweetPic, what we decided is we always want to make sure the user experience is first and foremost. And so we try to do that with our ads, by doing the highest quality ads we can, you know. And what ends up happening with apps that do that is that it creates a broken experience for the user, because some of their photos are here.
How many apps are you paying for placement in?
We don't pay anybody.
None of them.
Right. We decided not to do that because we don't really want to get into that ball game where, you know, we've got to convince people that, you know, you want to use this based on the amount of money we give them, you know. The user should be first and foremost, and that's what we believe in. And we've had some situations where some competitors have spoke out against us publicly, whether it be on their blog or things like that. But we've always made a decision there at TweetPic that we're just going to run our race, and we're not going to talk bad about anyone else or speak about anyone else, you know. We want to honor and respect our competitors, just like you would honor and respect any opponent you have in a soccer game, you know. So that's what we want to do.
Let's see. Ropico in the chat room is saying that you have a line in your bio that says, nice guys finish first. Why?
Right. Oh,
my question is why.
First. Yeah, so... I put that up.
Actually, I'm sorry. We were stepping over each other and Skype cut out. So can you say what the bio line is?
Yeah, my bio on Twitter says the nice guy that finished first, you know, because there's a whole mentality that, you know, nice guys finish last. And I do some public speaking every now and then about TweetPic. And what I try to end every talk with is that, you know, just be good, be nice. And just like I said, at the end of the day, do you feel good about yourself and what you've done? And also the grander scheme is when, you know, your time is up on this earth, are you going to feel good about the decisions you made in your life personally and also business-wise, you know? And so that's more important to me than making a buck.
Are you still a practicing Christian?
Yes.
You are? Still going to church?
Not regularly. I haven't been in a while, but yes.
Okay. Still listening to Christian music. If I look at your iPod, will there be Christian rock on there now?
Actually, probably not. I listen to a lot of things. Dave Matthews, techno, John Mayer, just a lot of everything. Right now, I think I'm listening to Timberland's new album, Shock Value, so I don't know if that's what you would call Christian music, but you know.
By the way, I'm noticing, and anyone who's watching us on video is noticing, that you keep reaching forward every once in a while, and that's because you're on a Mac, right? And on a Mac,
Yeah. The
screen goes dim if you don't touch it for a while.
Right, so yeah, sorry I keep doing that. People are like, you've got like some sort of ADD issue. That, no, my screen keeps dimming, so I can't see you, so I gotta touch my mouse pad.
Yeah, no, that's just a quirk with Macs. Yeah. I actually installed a program called Caffeine that stopped it from doing it on my system. Oh. But it's one of those little quirks with a Mac. You can't natively stop the screen from dimming. Yeah.
Well, I need to get that. That's a good idea.
Right, let's talk about legacy here. We've brought it up. We've touched on this. We've gotten to the edges of this subject in this interview. But let's dig deeper into it. We talked in the pre-interview about the Iran, about what happened with the protesters in Iran. About your site is being used for actually, I'm going to shut up right now, and I'm going to turn the subject over to you and talk to us a little bit about the impact. It seems like, sure, it's just about posting pictures of your girlfriend in her bathing suit, but it's bigger than that. What's happening in TwitPic?
So when I first started TwitPic, it was just a photo sharing site to me, or a product, you know, and I thought, oh, it's great that people can share photos with each other. There was the plane that crashed into the Hudson River, and I think it was January of 2009. One of our users on there, Yanis Crumbs, posted a photo, because he was on the ferry, one of the first ferries that came with the flight, and posted the photo of the plane. And that photo is actually what you saw on the news and on the newspapers, on the magazines, and it got sent around the world in a matter of hours. It actually brought our site down for about an hour, all the traffic coming to it, you know. And when that happened, it made me realize what we have with Twitter and TwitPic. You know, so media companies out there can't have millions of journalists across the world, but there are millions of social network users on Twitter and TwitPic, you know, and so they can snap a photo of something and send it out there, and people are getting news in real time. So we saw it happen with that. And that actually wasn't the first plane crash that we saw on TwitPic. There was one in December, I think, with a plane that went off the runway in Colorado, I believe. And so that was the first incident. The Iranian issue that happened with the conflict there, I think from what I understood, I guess, and don't quote me on this because I'm not 100% sure this was true, but what I heard was Twitter and TwitPic and other sites like that were blocked by the ISPs in that country. And so the users were using proxies to get out and posting stuff on Twitter and posting photos on TwitPic to help get their side of the story out. And so it was amazing to see that and see how people use the site. And then it's also amazing to see, too, I had a gentleman come to me and say thank you for TwitPic. And he was using it to share photos with his daughter, who is off at college. And they were able to keep in contact with that. And so that meant a lot to me as well.
Wow, I gotta build something that has that kind of an impact. All I've done is greeting cards online and contests. I gotta have something that has that kind of an impact. I can't imagine what it must be like. You're watching world events unfold and know that something that you created yourself is touching those world events. It's shaping them. It's allowing people to be active participants in what's going on in the world.
It's also a humbling experience too, because you know, in the end, it's nothing I've done really to make it what it is. You know, TwitPic is a blessing in itself, and I'm very thankful to be able to have the opportunity to do it. And it's also a great responsibility when you know your site's being used for these things, you know, and I don't take it lightly at all. And, you know, we want to provide the best thing we can.
All right. In the comments too, V. Lucas is pointing to a blog post on your competitor's site that says, "Thousands of angry TwitPic users." I'm not even going to talk about which one it is. And he's saying that's what you meant when you said that you're going to keep taking the high road and not attack your competitors.
Yeah, that's happened several times from multiple people. And, you know, and like I said, we only want to speak for ourselves, and we choose to do this our way. And, like, you know, and I encourage other people too. There's always going to be competitors in anything you do. And in the end, we're all human at the end of the day, you know, and we need to be civil. And that's just the road we choose to go.
And by the way, I want to make clear that I'm not necessarily condemning attacking your competitors. My point here is to just see how entrepreneurs like you are doing it, and to give you a forum to do it without saying you should be or you should be attacking. And also, Merrick, earlier in a private message to me, when I was asking why is it that TwitPic keeps getting used when there's so many new competitors, and he said that same competitor site is very cluttered, where TwitPic is just really clean. There's not a lot of clutter, not a lot around the pictures.
Yeah.
All right, let me go through my notes. Let's see if I've asked everything. How much revenue? Yes, we talked about the phone. We talked about user experience. Somebody in the comments earlier asked what kind of research you do around user experience. What do you do?
Mostly what we do is we just get feedback from users via support or via Twitter, you know, and sometimes I'll randomly find random users on Twitter that use TwitPic, and I'll start following them, maybe DM them and ask them, you know, hey, so what do you like about TwitPic, or what's some things you'd like to see, you know, just to kind of get a random polling. And so just stuff like that. No traditional user experience stuff, you know. That's how I do it.
We talked about advertising. We talked about, what else helps your growth? The APIs, they helped growth tremendously, right?
Yeah, so when I first started TwitPic, there was no API. And one of the first apps to come on board, I think, was Twirl. And he said asked if there was an API, and there wasn't. And so, oh, well, it actually isn't, but I can build one. So I spent that night and the next day building one and gave it to him. And he was the first one to integrate. So yeah, the API has been a great help, and just everything as a whole has basically made TwitPic what it is now.
What kind of integration did you allow apps like his in the beginning with the original APIs?
Basically, the original API allowed photos to be posted in via API. One of the new additions, not that new, we had it last year, was our thumbnail API. So you can view a thumbnail, multiple sizes of the photo inline in the app with our thumbnail API.
I'm going to see if I could take a question or two from the audience here. Newt is asking, why isn't there a user gallery or a search on TwitPic? He's wondering if it's because of privacy issues.
It's one of them, yes. Twitter has a great search too, and so we kind of use that in line. We've toyed around with the idea of adding search, and we're still kind of up in the air about it. And it's one of those things that if we can't do it good, we don't want to do it. But if we can, we might add it.
And search is just tough, right? It's very processor intensive, isn't it?
Yeah, search can be, yeah, especially if you want to get good results. You know, it's a whole scaling issue on its own. And the guys from SemiAnswers, who originally built Twitter Search, they did a great job with it. And, you know, obviously Twitter acquired them. And I think it's been a great addition for their company. It works fantastic.
I've been talking to the guys from SemiAnswers about having them on here and doing an interview with them. Apparently they've got a new project that's keeping them from coming here, but we got to get an interview with them soon.
Yeah, they're some great guys. I met a few of them when I was at the Twitter office, and they've got a great team, great people.
Cool. I think I went through all my notes here. Let me just make sure that I went through all of Merrick's notes, that, or as many as I can. I think so. I don't think I could ever go through all of his notes completely here. Thank you, Merrick, for doing it. Is there anything that that I missed? Is there anything, Noah, that you think people need to know about your work, about what's coming up maybe?
Let's see. Well, we are working on OAuth, and we'll be putting some new features to the site here soon. And we're just constantly trying to make it the best app possible. And we want the user's feedback all the time. Let us know what they would like to see, or what they'd like to see fixed, or what could be better, you know? Like, you know, TwitPic in the end is nothing without the users, and also nothing without their input, so.
All right, how about this? How about swerving your camera around? Can you show us where you're working?
Okay, so that's, that's kind of my work area. I don't know if you guys can see that.
Uh-huh.
I got the new 27-inch iMac right there. It's kind of bright outside, TV, et cetera. So not a whole lot going on, but yeah.
I see the keyboard over there.
Yeah.
What kind of view do you have outside your window?
I've got a palm tree and a live oak tree and a little pond out there. Yeah. Right,
cool. Hank Rogers, the guy behind Tetris, showed us around his place, and I thought it was kind of cool. I figured I'd ask you the same thing.
Yeah, I'd show you more, but it's actually a mess right now. I've got clothes all over my bedroom. I've got trash in the kitchen. It's embarrassing, and I don't want my mom to see it.
All right, well, let's leave it there. Thank you for doing the interview with me, Noah. Thanks for coming on Mixergy. Thank you, Merrick, for all the research and for putting this thing together. And thank you all for watching. I'm Andrew Warner. By the way, This is like manna from heaven for entrepreneurs. This is a guy who really built a business from nothing. We're talking about a $5,000 business, and that's $5,000 over months. And look at how far he got. Impact financially, impact politically, impact emotionally, the excitement, the satisfaction that comes from entrepreneurship. I think this story, I was so excited to do this interview with you, and I know that I got a lot of excitement for this interview because of that. This is the kind of story that a lot of entrepreneurs dream of, and thanks for being so open about it, right down to the numbers, right down to the fact that your mom's in the business and what it's like to work with your mom.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's been an honor, and I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Thank you all for watching, and I'm looking forward to your comments.